everybody. This is Dr. Taylor Hartman with Very Best of Living, which is what we're hoping you're all doing as you listen to our podcast. And I'm with my great friend, Kat Larson.
Hello, friend.
I'm not sure we've ever identified, like I'm doing this from my home in Sundance, right?
Yes.
And you're in Oklahoma.
There's so many things wrong with that sentence. I don't know. It's actually this week, Taylor. I've got like 3 feet of snow in my backyard.
Can you believe that? Well, but
it's
you
crazy.
You don't care. You're from Colorado, so you understand that dynamic, right? But you didn't expect it.
People, I mean, it's funny. It's just like, you know, how everybody's doing great. It's just, you know, they just don't have the snow plows.
No.
All of that stuff.
Well, I was watching that with Texas.
Everything sells out. Like there was not a snow shovel, a space heater, or any salt to throw anywhere. I mean, within, you know, a 600 mile radius of here.
So amazing.
You're pretty much SOL.
You're kind of like you don't plan for that. You don't expect that, right?
You don't. I mean, first time in 100 years is what I was reading. Like this has happened like
really?
This.
In 50 years?
100 years.
So you've been through one already. This is just the second one.
you say I was your first one. I'm not that one.
So I was thinking about that today. I'm wearing black today, all black, but listeners can't see that, but I am wearing black because I'm celebrating my midlife. I think I'm finally at midlife. I think so. 72 in May. I think that'll make about midlife. That's my guess. So we're going
to love it.
We're going to go with that. Is that fair? Makes sense, huh?
I love it. Yes, midlife. That's right. Well, truly. I mean, I think I said last time that, you know, my age, 59, is the new 23. So,
yes, it
is. I'm going with
it. And you know what? Here's the thing I like about being yellow. You literally can lie to yourself and believe it. That's the best part. Like, yes, of course, that's right.
How do people get through a day without not doing that? That's what I want to know.
That's so good. And just so our listeners know, Richie Stedman, who is he's kind of like our slave master, like just directs and tells us what to do. He is in Provo, Utah. So we're from all over the place. And you and I, of course, go back many, many years. And that's what makes this so much fun to do this with you. So I got some things today. We're going to talk about hard things, challenges, difficulties, and why we should face them and embrace them as opposed to run from them. But I always give you the opportunity first shot. Do you have any questions?
I do. I want to know the biggest change that you've experienced since last March. It's almost a year now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest change you personally have experienced?
Well, the most difficult thing I've experienced is not traveling. I mean, that has been the most difficult thing. I love, oh my gosh, our favorite things are to go on adventures and go see different parts of the world. So that's been out. We went to Mexico just about a couple weeks ago, and that was magic, pure magic, with our wonderful host. But I think that's number one. And then the second one probably has been how much it does not stress me. I don't live in that world of anxiety. I just don't think that way. Like, it is what it is. It's not fun. I don't like it. I think we are, there's a general malaise that people have about, well, what's really going to work and what isn't going to work. But I find that it doesn't really affect me personally. It affects my clients and therefore it matters to me, but it doesn't really affect me personally. So what's your awakening been from this pandemic?
I think that it's so funny. I fought this for about the first 4 months because I think it was like I felt like I was shutting down.
Mm.
I felt like I was shutting down, but what was happening, I was relaxing into some quiet.
Yes.
Like just sitting, you know, not going.
Yeah.
Because I like to go, but I really was judgmental of myself. I felt like at the end of the day, if we hadn't left the house or if I hadn't, you know, I don't know. It was just interesting to feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
I was like, there's something wrong because I'm not, as opposed to enjoying that I could.
Yes.
Because I almost feel like boring. Like I attach that to boring.
Okay. Okay. Got
me.
It. Yeah. So it defines you, the way you go and do, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yes. That's really good. I like that. And yet boring for you would be like, just shoot me. I can't do that. That doesn't work for me. And yet, in the truth of the matter, you actually calm down.
You do. And you get, can kind of figure some stuff out that, you know, like you listen differently. I always work on listening because I'm not a great listener by nature.
Right,
Are yellows bad listeners?
Yes. Are you kidding? They want to talk about themselves and what they're doing. Exactly. No, you. No. In fact, my clients will say to me, "You are really a good listener." I said, "Only because I'm in this office. If we're at the swimming pool and you're telling me a story that's going way too long, I'm like, no, this is not going to work for me." So by nature, yellows are like ADD. No, so they don't listen very well. That's a good point.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I have to tell you, my blue husband, Paco.
Yeah.
So blue-white.
Yep.
So, like, if he's telling me something and, like, I
yes.
look somewhere.
Yes.
He's like, okay. All right. Like, honey.
You know, that's
like
true.
If my eyes dart to the
right.
anything, right?
Yeah,
like
you're not listening.
Like, you're bored, right? You want to move on?
Isn't that so true? In fact, when I'm teaching and I'm speaking, I say to people, you can interrupt me all you want. It doesn't bother me as yellow. And I'll interrupt
right.
you too, right? But Paco would not do that. He sits and focuses. Gene's the same way.
Oh.
Yep. They're very much a good audience.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, that's good. So I have to ask you one more thing.
Yeah.
So there was a story going around on the internet. I don't know if you saw it about you. it was on our Instagram page.
Oh.
And I want to know the whole thing. I'm not quite clear about Taylor Dawn, Dawn
Oh, Hartman, man.
Taylor Donald Hartman. Who are you?
Can
really?
You believe that story? Okay, so not to bore our listeners, but it really is kind of a fun story. So I was born Donald Decker Hartman. Now,
Donald Decker Hartman.
Donald was my mother's favorite name. She loved that
yes.
name. And Decker was her family line. But I got a lot of insurance mailings like Donald Pecker Hartman. And I was fine. I was Don. That's who I was to the world. And then I went to Brigham Young University, and I was given a great opportunity to teach at a very young age. I was like 22, and I was teaching, and they said, you must go by Brother Hartman. You don't go by your first name. And I said, what are you talking about? Like a Brother Hartman sounds like a monk or an old person. So that doesn't work for me. So I said, you know, as typical as a yellow, I said, so what if I went by a name that isn't mine? Like, okay, I'll go by a name that isn't mine. So then that's a detachment from the students. And they said, well, we've never been asked that before. So, okay, if you want to do that, you can do that. So I started teaching, and I went by a name I always liked, which is Taylor. So Taylor Hartman was my name. At the same time, I just happened this way. Serendipitous. I broke off a relationship. I moved apartments. I was in a whole different kind of world, and I got very close to my students. And all of them just started knowing me as Taylor, like everyone did. So that's how I was known. And then when Jean, my wife and I met, she came to my apartment and my dad was there visiting me because I'd gone blind. And he said, I'm Don's dad. And Jean thought it was my roommate because I'm not Don. So it wasn't until we got married that we got invitations set up. I said, just so you know, I need so many in Don Hartman and so many with Taylor Hartman. And she said to me, who am I marrying? Who are you? So anyway, it wasn't.
A great story.
I had like two or three kids story. Before I realized it. No, I had.
So when
I actually,
did Donald Pecker Hartman come out? I want to know. When do you use that alter ego?
You know, honestly, never. It's like dead to me. Like it doesn't even exist, right?
It's dead to me.
But it was my poor mother. She hated the fact I gave it up.
Did you legally change your name?
Yes, because I had three kids. And then we adopted our fourth. And on the fourth, the adoption, I realized that all my kids were bastards because they didn't have my name. So I changed it legally when we adopted it.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
You're very welcome.
You know, hopefully the gossip mongers will stop spreading lies about you.
Well, it is true that when I moved with my wife back to California, we went to our church group there. And I'm thinking I'm very funny. So I said, I used to go by Donna. That's how you know me. But I've been in prison. So I wanted a fresh start. And oh my gosh, we had the whole bishop and the whole world coming over to visit us very quickly.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. Let's roll, baby.
Okay. So I want to talk today about challenges. So it comes from my granddaughter got about 3 or 4 more years of high school. And she's not doing well with friends. And she's great at cheerleading. She loves that kind of thing, but she's struggling. So she says to her mom and dad, I want to go to homeschool. And so I get brought into the dialogue, right? And I loved this opportunity to have this dialogue because it was like, no, that's not even an option. No. If you're going to start running from problems now, it's only going to get worse later. And number two, you'll have nothing in your dossier about what you've done to overcome problems. You have no substance. So part of the magic I experienced when I was dealing with her was what it means to really own your life and own your problems instead of blaming others for them. So at this point, she's, of course, blaming others that are not nice to her, blaming the school because it doesn't support, that kind of stuff, right? Blaming her parents that won't let her stay home. And so I said, you know, what I want you to do, unfortunately, she's a red. I said, you know, that's not red. You're not doing red at all. You're acting very, very weak and like pathetic. And I want to know what you're willing to do to every day do something proactively to overcome this trial. And I said, it can be a change of attitude. It can be a smile at somebody new. It can sit with somebody at lunch that you never sat with. It's sit in the closet and read. I don't care what you do, but something different and positive to make it okay for you to manage staying in school. So that was the agreement. And I said, I want to know every day what you do. So the next day, my daughter calls me and she, and her daughter's in the car, and she says, now I'm kind of stuck, Dad. What do we do with this? So I said to her, how was your day? And she goes, it was better. And she goes, what did you do? And she said, nothing. And she says, so now what do I do? Because you said she has to do something different. I said, no, here's the deal. When someone says to me, I don't know, I'm like, that's a lie. You do know. You may not know it consciously, but you do know. There's an answer. There's always a reason behind your behavior. So until you can tell me what you know and why you're doing this, what you're going through, that's on you. That you have to own that. So then I said to her, I'm fine with that. You just said to me, it was a better day. As long as you changed your attitude such that it was a better day, I don't care if you ever come up with anything different. But the one day you start whining, I'll nail you again. The one day you say, you know what? I'm having a really bad time again. I'm really happy to be here. I will remind you that you chose not to be proactive about coming up with new ideas. You just chose to be better. And I'm saying that's, I'm going to hold you to that now. So that was really kind of a meaningful moment for me, like realizing that there are people, effectively, I have a bias. I think a lot of young people are given passes today. I mean, everybody that runs gets a trophy. I mean, it's just not reality. And so I want young people especially to learn what it means to take a trial, a difficult moment, and turn it into a positive, a win in your life. That make sense?
Yeah, it does. I have a question for you. Is there in your mind any, so let's just take what you're talking about. So this whole bullying thing,
yeah,
and
right,
you know,
right.
I mean, not bullying. I don't know if that was right. Part of this. Was that part
of
this?
Yeah, there was some of it. Yeah. Yep. It was.
It was. So is there any time where it is when you look at something like that and say, because I know what people do. They go, well, yeah, that's that situation, but my daughter had it much worse, or my son, you know, it was a different situation, so I did homeschool him. Can you just, I don't think there's any definitive answer on this, but what would you say if somebody said that to you?
I would always, that's a great point. It's not definitive, except that it is definitive if in your behavior is locked in by fear. I don't buy it. If fear is driving you to a reaction or a behavior that you're going to accept because of your fear, I can guarantee you, you're not owning your life. I can guarantee it. So anytime you're given an opportunity to face a challenge, if fear is what's driving you to accept it or to do something inappropriate, that's unhealthy. The only healthy way to deal with any kind of life situation is to be proactive about how you can own it. And I'm not saying you have to own it in the same way as everybody else. I'm not saying that. I mean, owning it may be staying home, being homeschooled. That may be the answer, but it certainly wasn't the answer for my granddaughter. So
when was this?
This was 2 days ago.
Oh, this is just now.
Yeah, it just happened. So, but what I'm trying to relay to our listeners, I want you guys to realize it doesn't matter whether your husband is an alcoholic. It doesn't matter whether you've got 50 pounds you can never lose weight with. It doesn't matter if your husband said to you, I don't love you. I've never liked you. It doesn't matter if your wife doesn't do anything to help you out with your career. It doesn't matter. What matters is what's your ownership in that? What are you going to do about that? And I don't think most of us go there. I think we go to blaming the person that's making our life difficult. But you'll notice people that do that are never happy because who owns them is not changing. So as long as they're not going to change, you're stuck miserable because you don't own your problem. They do. And they're not owning it. They're not going to fix it. They're not going to change it. So now you're a victim. And I just, ugh, that frustrates me so much.
But that, and that's really, really interesting. And I think in this, it's like, you know how like when you're trying to figure out how to lose weight, right?
Yes,
and you do everything but what the obvious is, right, to eat less calories, right? You know, it's like that's the end of the day.
Focus on diet. Focus on diet.
There's no program, keto, diet. It's all about eating less calories.
100%.
Right? So,
and the right kind of calories.
Look at that come from, and it's simplified.
Yep.
Where I get confused, what you're saying is like, if your husband A, B, or C does this and you love him, that's when it gets messy, right?
No.
These challenges get messy when we are tied to that emotional piece of it. And that's, and the work keeps coming down to what? So explain that to me.
Okay. So you're thinking it's about your husband when it's about you. That's the problem I have with so many of us. Like you gave a great example with weight loss. People don't own the problem is how they look at it. And by the way, the more simple you make the answer, the less they believe you. They want it complex and convoluted and uncomfortable. And I'm like, no, you know what you need to do. You just don't want to do it. Like, for example, if somebody says, I don't love you. Okay, let's start with, well, do you love yourself? Well, no, of course not, because he doesn't love me. And that's what I was looking for. Okay, well, that's great. Now your job is to learn to love yourself. Let's start there. We're going to figure you out first. And by the way, once we get done with that, we may not even have to worry about him, or we'll deal with him from a very different perspective than you're dealing with him right now. Just get you together right first. So it's messy because people are messy. Like, life is messy, but it's truth that clears it up. It's truth that says, ah, I see it. Like what you just said about weight loss or weight management. The sooner you can get clear about the truth, that's when you start to really control the process.
And that's so good.
If you let other people define for you the truth, good luck. In fact, I ask a question of clients often. I want to know which voice percentage owns you. So you have two options. One is your voice, inside, internal, intrinsic, and two is others' voices, what they say, how they feel, how they react to you. And anytime you have a higher percentage of others' voices matter more, they're impacting you more than your own voice, you got serious problems because you're vulnerable. You go with the wind, like whatever happens. If I, take you're a girl, you go to high school and you wear a certain outfit and you're looking for their approval, you'll change outfits so they don't agree. As opposed to someone says, I dress for myself. I like how I look. So it's coming to that. And I will be honest with you. People are born with different levels and percentages of that awareness. They're born that way.
I was just going to ask that question.
Yeah.
So you come with that, huh?
Absolutely. 100%. And then your parents can impact that. Like, they can help you believe that you are legitimate, or they can help you believe you're not, right? There are some personalities that I love. They're so vibrant and so strong. They'll never bend and deter their growth based on what a parent would say. But most are not that way. Most, I think, are vulnerable, right, to that. And then, of course, I'll be honest, the biggest decision of your entire life ever is who you marry, 100%. Because that person, now they have a voice in your life. And again, you have to be clear, do I want their say more important to me than my say? So it's kind of tricky in that I don't want people to think that I believe people should just be selfish and insular. I don't believe that for one minute. I like people giving feedback and suggestions and ideas. And if it resonates with truth, you should embrace it, whoever it comes from. But on the other hand, it's your life. You have to own it and you have to be responsible for it. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. So I'm going to ask you said something earlier about the I don't know. I hear that a lot in the world. Like, I don't know. I don't know. So is it a you do know? You have to sit in it for a lot longer than we think we should have to. Is that what the only option there? You do know. You do know because you know for yourself? Or are there really people that just don't know?
No, there are people that just don't know, but they just haven't done their work. I mean, typically those people want you to know for them. And then they'll resent you once you tell them what to do. So it's a lose-lose if you go that route, right? So in my mind, it's very important for people to own their life. So if you say, I don't know, like, do you want to stay married? I don't know. Okay, then stay married, because obviously you don't have any plan for anything else. But if you want to truly ask yourself, am I happy? Am I legitimate? Am I committed? Am I giving in this relationship? Am I forgiving? Am I whatever? Those kind of things, you'll know. Then you'll know. But I don't think everybody always wants to do their work. That's the difference. I really don't.
And you've never seen, I mean, you see people make choices, but you've never seen anybody that's not equipped to go after truth and, you know, you can't handle the truth kind of approach, right? You've never met anybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I have met people like that. And I've come, you know, now that I'm almost midlife, I've come to realize that there are people that they aren't ready. I do see that. They're just not ready. They're not equipped. Kind of like you in Oklahoma with the snow. Like, you're not equipped, right? So it's not like, right. I don't blame them as much as I would have when I was younger. Like, of course you can figure this out. I look at it and go, okay, well, maybe in time it'll come to you. Now there'll be consequences. I mean, there are things you can, like, you can lose the entire life of your children not figuring it out in time. That can happen, right? Or you can lose your energy and zest for life. I think of this woman I'm working with. She's married to a wonderful man who's so messed up. And I looked at a picture of her single and married, and I said, oh my, like, you are a bad example for marriage. This is not looking good. And she said, you're absolutely right. I'm not my best self, and I've given me up. And I said, okay, well, let's just get you right first. Let's make you legit, because your husband's not ready. He's not even close to being ready to work on him, who he is. And she was great about it. She goes, that may save the marriage, she said, because otherwise I can't stay. But I mean, if you're ready and you're anxious, then I think it's exciting. But I've seen many clients that I've just said, you know what? I'm teaching you to play tennis like you could be at Wimbledon, and you want to hit the ball in the park. That's fine, but that's not what I want to do. I want to give you some skills to get you into a quality of life that I believe is what you're worthy of. But I don't think they're ready for that. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and I also have a question about accountability. I just read something, you know how, like, we always talk about things, like, trends go through things. And I just read something about that it is impossible to hold another human accountable for the kind of things that we're talking about. Is that your belief?
Well, ultimately, you got to hold yourself accountable, right? But I am a big believer in persuasion. I think some of us have great persuasive skills. I do.
Yes.
I think we matter to people. So if we were to say to them, look, I'm in this with you. I want to make this work. I've seen parents do it with kids. I've seen spouses with spouses. I've seen leaders at companies. I've seen it, you know? So I think you can actually, you can have the gift of people wanting your approval enough that they will allow you to hold them accountable. I've seen that for sure. But at the end of the day, it's still your choice to be accountable.
It is. Correct.
Yeah. Because remember, like, when I wrote the book, the People Code, like, I was like, I wore out 4 red, literary, talented writers. And I just would not be accountable. I would not show up. I would not have my work done. So, I mean, we're all vulnerable to not being accountable. And we're all, I think some of us are pretty persuasive and others are not very persuasive, but they are usually the ones that are good at holding themselves accountable.
Yeah, I just love that. I love that, the place when you are ready, when you are ready, you know, like, in one of our conversations, you said something about until you're committed. And I think you're making it really clear. Like, I don't do anything until I'm committed.
I don't.
To it. Mm-mm. To knowing. Like, if I say, I don't know, well, then you're not committed to knowing. It's like, well, if you want to lose weight, eat less calories. It's just, there's not a lot of buffer around this stuff. I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty bare to the bone, right?
And
I try
love
to make
that.
It so complicated.
Well, you're right. And I think that's what's so good about what you're saying. I really like what you're saying, because the truth is, if you're not really committed, just own it. I'm not there yet. I can respect that far better than someone who always claims they are and they don't show up. So, and we're ready at different times in our lives. But just remember, there are consequences for however long it takes you to get ready. So you can't just think it's okay for you to kind of take a lifetime. Like, I have a couple right now that is, he can't decide if he wants kids because the world's in the shape it's in. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend wants kids, and she's very clear about it. So he's decided to take a path of about 3 to 6 months to figure out if he wants to have kids. And I said, well, how's that going to play out in the rest of your marriage with other things that come into your life? I mean, it'll drive your girlfriend crazy. She's red, he's blue. I said, you really want her to wait like 3 to 6 months every time you have a big decision to make? And he said, that's how I have to do it. So there's not a lot of confidence. He doesn't have a lot of intuition within himself, a sense of what I mean, most people know if they want to have kids or they don't. And even if they don't want to have kids, people know whether they're willing to give it a go regardless or not. Mm-hmm. They know that. Mm-hmm. So not saying I don't know to that process and then extending the process doesn't necessarily make it effective, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's really, I think that's pretty golden right there, because as you look at it, it's like extending it, and that's what you do, and how long
right.
do you wait. And you're right, everybody's on their own path. I mean, that's that free will piece.
Right, you know, good
that's
point.
The beautiful thing about humans, right? We got free will.
Totally agree.
We can't make choices around things.
Well, you know, I think about that too, Kat, with people that live in communist countries. I've always felt like, what a tragedy. They're not necessarily given the opportunity to express their free agency. Like to really show who do you want to be? And one of the most beautiful parts about America to me has always been the land of opportunity. You can become something, whatever it is you want to be. And
yes.
we got to be honest and realize that we live in a very unique period of time when that exists in the world. There have been very rare opportunities ever in the history of the world where people had that kind of freedom to make those choices. Not that we always do it well. But I don't know that we guard that freedom very well either. Like that amazing gift of being able to choose.
No, it's so funny. My daughter's watching this something on television, mm-hmm. on Netflix, some Bridgerton or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
I think that's the name of it.
Yep.
I haven't watched it yet, but we were talking about this. And she said, you know, Mom, if you were
a maid back in those days and you were scrubbing the floor, you couldn't work yourself up. You couldn't go from a maid to a this, to a that, to a that. Or, I mean, you could never become rich, right?
I can't imagine you as a maid. Let's just start. Let's start right there. Okay.
But that's funny. It's like what you're saying is you're so right. And we don't, you know, starting with challenges and looking at our choices and how to do things, and that we are in this unique place that we have this, it's almost like a luxury to do some of this self-awareness growth.
100%. Absolutely.
And I love it. I mean, I feel pretty protective of that for sure.
Yeah.
In our world. But it wasn't that long ago where if you were a stable guy, your dad was probably a stable guy.
Yep.
His dad was. And
yep.
So you're just going along, right?
It's such a great insight. We're not grateful enough for the opportunity we have right now. Like you say, in a very limited period of time to even have this.
Yes.
So for those of us that have it and don't take it, that's the real tragedy. I'm sure people that are stable boys will someday say to us, what were you doing? Like, are you kidding me? You had the opportunity to do what? And you didn't do it? So I do.
Yeah, and you blew it.
Yeah, you blew it. You blew it. You didn't take advantage of all the opportunities, right? But you know, it's funny too. So I'm talking to my granddaughter and I'm thinking about things that are going on. And I'm, I don't know, it hit me all of a sudden. The making of a pearl in an oyster starts with the irritant. There's got to be an irritant. And if there isn't a natural irritant, they introduce an irritant, which is the sand, mm-hmm. right? So it seems to me that it's such a remarkable story. I didn't realize this, so I kind of researched it a little bit. Like most pearls, like take from 6 months, they can be that quick, to 4 years. And then at the end of the day, you get this beautiful pearl. And I think about, so as I was reading about it, I was thinking about my life and things that I have struggled with and challenges I've had and what came out of them. That irritant in my life, what made it, and I could always see how it could have gone good or bad. I am looking back now. I'm sure you can do the same thing. You think back and you go, my gosh, if I had not accepted that burden or that challenge, right? I would have been in worse shape than I am today by accepting it. And I think of in the character code when I wrote about Sadhu Singh, who's the monk traveling from one monastery to another with a friend of his, a monk. And as they're traveling, they hear a voice calling for help off a ledge in the mountain. But it's starting to snow and it's starting to come down hard. So the one monk says that's God's way of saying that's his time has come. He's done. Sadhu Singh said, I think that's God's way of saying, am I going to help my fellow men? So the one monk goes on and Sadhu Singh climbs down this ledge, finds this young man that's got a broken leg and falling off it and gets him back up onto the path and then puts him on his back. And carries him to the next monastery, which they can see in the distance finally after a while. And it's very, very hard to see because the snow is falling heavy. And then they stumble over a rock in the road, like this big boulder. And as they get up, they discover that it's not a boulder. It's the monk, the first monk that went on without them. And then he was asked many years later, what is the greatest burden in the world. And he goes, the greatest burden is to have no burden. And I love that. I love that, that the growth dynamic that that suggests for me is so rich. Like if you really don't have other challenges or opportunities to grow, that is the greatest burden in your life. And yet I look at how most of us run from those burdens, like don't want them, right? Seek other ways to ease out of them. And yet,
well, the homeschool.
Yes, there's the homeschool.
Take your kid out of high school and put her at home.
Absolutely. I don't think that's abnormal. I don't. I think a lot of us are very vulnerable to taking the easier path instead of doing the hard thing. So, but at the end of the day, what I'm hoping our listeners will get today is just the awareness that, okay, let me count up my gratitude. What are my blessings? What am I being challenged with? And I'll be honest, like now that I'm past parenting my own kids, right, in the home, mm-hmm. I am thrilled when I hear things come up that I'm not having to deal with, they're dealing with, I'm not. But I'm so glad I did it at one point. If I'd never done it, I would not be happy. I would feel like I missed something. But now, once you've done it, I don't know that you want to go back and do it again, but it is part of your...
Wait. You got to re-say that because that's really good. So when you hear something from your children, say it again, Taylor, because I think this is critical.
Well, are you suggesting the idea when I said, I see what they're going through and I don't myself want to go through it again. It was wonderful to have gone through it. But the only reason I can say that is because I have been through it. If I had not gone through it, I would probably look at them with envy, like, I wish I had the opportunity to experience what you're going through, but I have been through it. Therefore, I don't need to go back and go through it again. And so I think it's such an important part of life. Like, have you invited challenges that have helped you grow? And I think, like some of us, we create our own sand, our own irritations. You know, like some people that are listening are out there, you know who you are. They're just difficult people. Like they wake up and they're grumpy. Like there's nothing happened yet. Well, it will happen. Trust me. Like, okay. So you are your own irritant, right? And then other people, it seems to me like other people create the irritant. Like they're caring about so many people and others bring irritants into their lives with their lives choices that they make, right? And I'm spiritual enough to believe, I think even God loves us enough that he will actually introduce irritants so that we can grow. So I see it on all levels, right? The problem I have is when I'm doing the introducing of the irritant and I'm blaming others, that doesn't feel right to me. At least own, if you're doing it to yourself, it's your job to own it and fix it. And by the way, be humble enough that if others are bringing it to you or God's bringing it to you, be grateful. Like, okay, you're in this life to make life better for others anyway. So that's an opportunity.
Oh, so like carrying the guy on your back.
Yep, yep.
And because he was working and there was two of them and the potential of those two together created, you know, I love that.
Purpose.
That energy that they created together to keep each other alive.
Yes,
right? I mean,
yes.
You have to have others. You have to. I can't reach something. And I might even kill myself trying to do it on my own.
Yes.
So, gosh, that's all right. It's a lot to think about, Taylor.
Well, that was a fun one. Great session.
That was a really good
one. We hope our listeners are not falling asleep. We hope you're awake and you're enjoying this. We will sign off for now, but it was wonderful, as always, to be with you. And we look forward to talking to you next week. Bye for now.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, Color Code family, it's Kathy Larson. I want you to take down a number. I want you to put this in your contact list under the people code. The number is 385-526-2350. Again, 385-526-2350. Text the word VIP to that number and you'll get back from us a request for your name and your email. That way we'll be in touch with you on anything that's happening at the People Code, any offerings, exciting things that are coming up, and you can let us know what your needs are by texting us at that number. Look forward to staying connected even more. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.